Hello again, I'm Armin Alney. It is unlikely that Republicans in Congress will be able to defund Obamacare or find other ways to derail a train that's about to arrive. California officials say they are on track for implementation. Here's a report from Saul Gonzalez.
The clock is ticking. In 3 weeks, on October 1st, uninsured Californians can start enrolling in new individual health insurance plans under the Affordable Care Act, or Obamacare. And just 3 months after that, on January 1st, those policies kick in. Now, to prepare people for health care reform, the state is starting to crank up an educational and outreach campaign. That includes hosting old-fashioned town hall meetings across the state.
Now I'd like you to raise your hand if you know someone that doesn't have health insurance. Every person in this room has raised their hand.
Last Friday, a town hall was held on the campus of Cal State Long Beach. About 100 people gathered to hear a kind of Obamacare 101 tutorial from Peter Lee. He's the executive director of Covered California, the agency administering the state's insurance marketplace. Lee started with a sales pitch on behalf of Obamacare.
For the first time, we are saying in America, healthcare is a right, not a privilege. For the first time, we're saying quality, affordable health insurance is going to be on the way.
For the next hour, Lee then took questions from the audience.
If everybody's going to have health care, then what's going to be the driving force for people to be healthy on their own?
Great. That's a great question. So it's one of the things the Affordable Care Act does is say people need to take charge of their own health. Health care is not free. You still got a cost when you go see the doctor. You still have incentives to manage your care well, to make a good choice, to pick the right doctor, to pick the right clinic. If you got a hip replacement, it's going to cost me something. So there still are reasons that consumers need to make the right choice for them.
After the town hall was over, I met Linda Young, a community outreach educator with a local healthcare clinic. I asked her this.
Why do you need to be here today, given this is what you do daily? I would think you're totally well informed about the Affordable Care Act.
No, I think that because it's so new for our society, that I want to make sure that when I'm talking to a patient, that they fully understand and are comfortable with the information, given the options that they now have for health care.
And when you talk to people, how much do you think they really know about the brass tacks of Obamacare?
Very little.
Very little.
Very little.
That's why this town hall meeting is just one example of a much larger $80 million outreach effort to explain health care reform to the people of California. In the weeks and months ahead, it will be impossible to ignore, says Peter Lee of Covered California.
You will not be able to avoid seeing Covered California come October through the end of open enrollment period. We're going to be in radio, in TV, in local papers, in ethnic media, Chinese newspapers and Korean papers and papers that are anchored in the African-American community. We're going to be across the board speaking to and with Californians about these changes.
And with that, Lee and his Covered California staff packed up their computers and paperwork and headed off to their next town hall in San Diego.
Saul Gonzalez here in the studio right now. Who were the people who came to the town hall, and did they seem to be confused? Were these people who were angry and opposed to Obamacare, or just folks who wanted to know if they qualified and how to do it?
Two kinds of people were at the town hall, Warren. One were just normal, everyday citizens. They wanted to find out more about Obamacare and how to take advantage of it, and they came with a lot of questions and a lot of very specific questions. And then the rest, probably the other 50%, were healthcare professionals, people like the woman you heard in the piece who, were of the healthcare system, but still had a lot of their own questions. And again, this is an education for all of us. Joe and Jane Citizen to people who are well versed in the healthcare system as it's been. And Peter Lee, answered as many questions as he could. Those questions that couldn't be answered during the town hall, they said they would get back to them with the answers in an email to come.
So, in other words, people asked very specific questions that had to do with their very specific situation.
Exactly. And they weren't questions. I mean, there were people, the woman who asked a question in the piece, I talked to her afterwards, she was hostile to Obamacare. She felt that it just wasn't good for the country. But you really didn't, even if people felt that way, they weren't there to protest. Mm. Everybody just assumed this was happening. Again, the train is down the track. How do we get aboard it in a way that's most rational for us in our healthcare situation?
Are the real targets the people, the millions of people who qualify or may qualify and be eligible? Or are there these clinics and others who may sort of be ending up as middle people to help others understand what Covered California is all about?
Well, Let me answer the first part of your question. The target is everyone in California who's uninsured or is seeking some other insurance plan. The target within that larger population in particular are 20 and 30 somethings. You've heard of this term, you know, the young invulnerables. These are the ones they're most concerned about who are not going to sign up for insurance policies. But for this to work, they have to reach young, healthy people who come aboard the vessel and sign up if it's going to work and if costs are going to be kept under control.
The young invulnerables are the people who think they are invulnerable.
Or the young invincibles.
They learn otherwise.
The young invincibles. I might have misspoke.
We heard Peter Lee say that it's going to be impossible to ignore all of this. California has made a massive commercial buy. Here's an example.
Soon, Californians from Sacramento to Salinas to San Diego will have equal access to quality health insurance. Those who need financial assistance will get it. And nobody will be denied because of a pre-existing condition. Welcome to a new state of health. Welcome to Covered California.
And there are ads in Spanish as well.
Bienvenido a un nuevo estado de salud. Bienvenido a Covered California. Infórmate en coveredca.com.
And there will be ads in other languages, too. Opponents of Obamacare, though, are not staying quiet. Here's another spot. This is from Crossroads GPS, which is run by the Republican operative Karl Rove.
Work sucks. That's why we at Obamacare want to trade your full-time job for a part-time one. So you'll have more time for fun things, like watching millionaire celebrities tweet about how affordable we are. Obamacare. Just like guys enjoy premium leather seats, so too you'll enjoy paying triple the healthcare premiums out of your new part-time salary.
So the controversy continues, as you hear, a very cynical ad by Crossroads GPS. Obamacare, though, is not the only federal health benefit program to be rolled out amid confusion and controversy. Jack Hoadley is a research professor at the Georgetown Health Policy Institute in Washington. Professor, good to have you on our program.
I'm glad to be here.
Tell us what happened with Medicare and with the Part D Medicare drug program.
Well, you know, if you go all the way back to the start of Medicare, which rolled out almost 50 years ago in 1966, you know, a lot of the same things we're hearing today were true back then. It was a politically contentious period. The doctors were opposed to Medicare. Nobody knew what it was going to be. And there were a lot of issues, and yet people in the end enrolled. And then we had another round of that same kind of situation in 2005, just 8 years ago, when Medicare for the first time rolled out a prescription drug benefit known as Part D. Again, it was an unpopular program. People thought they had very little information. That was the line you heard in your meetings. It was politically contentious. There was uncertainty over whether it would work. In the end, a lot of people enrolled, and now it's a very popular program, as is Medicare as a whole.
Well, now we have a situation where California may be ahead, may be doing this effort that we've heard about from Saul Gonzalez and from Peter Lee, who's in charge of Covered California, but other states aren't doing it. How much is that going to complicate things?
It really will complicate things. I mean, there will be outreach efforts that are national that the federal government will run. You've already heard, Bill Clinton, the president, Secretary Sebelius out there making statements on this. And there are groups that are funded in every state around the country to do something. But you're absolutely right. It is going to be a tougher path in the states that are not as active around this as California is.
You've done some historical study. Given what you've heard just tonight about what's going on in California, does it appear that they're making a more effective effort than was made in the past to let people know what to expect?
It certainly sounds like a very good effort. I think there were some pretty good efforts done, say, in the Medicare Part D rollout. There were an enormous number of outreach meetings. There was a bus that made tours all over the country. There were a lot of events. There were advertisements. So in some ways, it's a lot of the same kind of things were done back then as what's being done in California. Some of it has to be local with the kind of town meetings that you had described. Other of it is the kind of media ads that you also just ran a couple minutes ago.
How long did it take for Medicare Part D, for example, to become popular, to be well-regarded and accepted as a part of life?
Really, once people got enrolled in the program, I mean, like the Obamacare rollout. It's going to be several months starting in the fall. It started in the fall of 2005. People could continue to enroll into the spring of 2006. But once they started getting the benefits from the program, they started seeing the program in a much kinder light. And it was really within a year's time you started to see poll results much more positive about what people thought, and then growing over time after that.
Saul Gonzalez, there was no Internet in 1965, and of course in 2005 it was much less pervasive than it is now. What role, how big a role is it going to play here in California?
Well, theoretically, the Internet is supposed to be our main portal into healthcare reform, Warren. You're supposed to go to the Covered California website and there both get information and get cost calculations on your individual insurance plan or the plan for your family. A couple of added twists, if I may, Warren, quickly about California that take us outside the norm. We're one of the few states that are actually going to run our own insurance marketplace. Most states aren't. It's going to be run by the federal government. So that means we're in those states that are running their own insurance programs, their own insurance marketplaces, are spending more per capita that states that aren't, that are just relying on the feds to take care of that. Secondly, it's California, and it may be home state pride to say this, but, you know, because of the size of this state, because of the number of uninsured, what you often hear in healthcare circles, at least in this state, of course, is as goes California, so goes the country. And for Obamacare to work nationally, it absolutely must work in this state, again, because of our size and the raw numbers of people we're dealing with, both insured and uninsured and underinsured.
Jack Hoadley, in 1966, as I understand it, there were other states who rolled out to different versions of Medicare. Have we learned anything from that?
There was certainly an experience. One of the things that particularly complicated things in the original Medicare rollout, we were still in the days of segregation, and one of the requirements for a hospital to sign up to treat patients under Medicare is they had to agree to treat all patients, regardless of race. And that was a lot more of an issue in 1966 than it is today, fortunately.
Okay. Well, we will see how it all works out here in California and elsewhere. In the meantime, thanks to both of you for being on our program. Jack Hoadley, again, research professor, Georgetown Health Policy Institute. Great to have you with us.
Thank you very much.
Saul Gonzalez, right here in the studio. Good as always to have you as well.
Thanks, Warren.
In a moment, the AFL-CIO convention in downtown L.A. on Which Way, L.A.?
Subscribe to the Which Way LA podcast at kcrw.com/whichwayla or on the podcast page at iTunes. You can also find Which Way LA on KCRW's smartphone apps, now for iPhone, Android, and BlackBerry.
Hello again, Warren Olney, back with Which Way LA at this week's AFL-CIO convention in downtown LA. Richard Trumka is expected to be reelected president without any opposition. He concedes that organized labor has lost its clout as membership has declined, and he has a plan for change. Harold Meyerson went from the Los Angeles Weekly to become editor-at-large for the American Prospect and a columnist for the Washington Post. He is back in town at the convention center with the AFL-CIO in downtown LA. Harold, always good to talk with you.
And always good to be here.
Tell us what it is that Richard Trumka has in mind. He calls it a bold new plan for getting labor's clout back.
Well, it is somewhat bold. It recognizes that the traditional way of amassing worker power through unions doesn't really work anymore because of any number of reasons, globalization, deindustrialization, and employers' ability to fire workers during organizing drives, which is illegal, but there's no serious penalty for doing it. Union growth has stalled, and in fact, unions are down to, in the private sector, just 6.6% of the workforce. So that isn't working. So what are they going to do? Well, there are sort of two directions they're moving in. One is to include workers who aren't quite members of unions, but nonetheless are trying to organize. Taxi cab drivers who are labeled independent contractors, even though they work for cab companies, domestic workers, some day laborers. They're going to try to affiliate these groups within the federation. There's a little pushback, but not much on that. So that's one idea. And the other is to build a much sort of closer, permanent relationships, build coalitions with really the other elements of progressive America, with environmental groups, feminist groups. I mean, tellingly enough, yesterday during the debate on this resolution, there were three speakers in favor of this resolution who weren't either delegates to the convention or union members. One of them, Terry O'Neill, who was the president of the National Organization for Women. You may wonder what the president of an organization that historically has nothing formally to do with labor was speaking on this resolution for, but this is what Trump wanted. There's been a little.
What did she say? What kind of appeal did she make?
She basically said that 2/3 of the minimum wage workers in the United States are women, that they have specific economic as well as social problems. It's not just simply the denial of reproductive freedoms, but the denial of equal wages and being ghettoized in low-paying jobs, and that they found real common cause with the labor movement. That's what she said.
What about collective bargaining? If taxi drivers are independent contractors, a lot of them own their own cabs, who do they negotiate with? What about domestic workers? Do they negotiate with mom and dad when they're going to come and clean the house?
They don't. What we're looking at is sort of collective bargaining by other means. The domestic workers were able to get a Bill of Rights passed in the state of New York, and they're hoping to get one passed in the state of California that would set minimum wages and upward limits on the hours that they're required to work. The taxi drivers went to the taxi commission and got a better deal. So they're not really negotiating with employers, but they can better their working conditions and sometimes their pay by going through city councils and state legislatures, and that's a lot of the strategy. That's part of the strategy, too, behind the fast food worker strikes, which we've been seeing now all across the country. It's unlikely they're ever going to get McDonald's to the table, at least for the foreseeable future. But you could imagine a city council passing a living wage ordinance for fast food joints in its particular city.
Okay. Harold Meyerson, again, editor-at-large now at the American Prospect, columnist for The Washington Post, formerly a reporter here in Los Angeles and an editor as well. Interesting that they are here in Los Angeles. Victor Naro is a project director at the UCLA Leber Center. He also teaches classes that focus on immigrant workers and the labor movement. Good to have you on our program, Victor Naro.
Well, thank you, Owen, for having me.
Talking to the convention, and these, of course, are the leaders of the labor movement, not the rank and file, your colleague told them on Sunday that they were too male, too pale, and too stale. What was he talking about?
Well, yeah, that was a comment made by our director, Ken Wong, and I think that was a comment in generalization of what's been wrong with the labor movement for the past 25, 30 years. But in Los Angeles, I mean, Los Angeles is really highlighting that we're going in a different direction. I mean, you know, Marielena Durazo is a woman of color leading the largest labor federation, Central Labor Council in the country. LaFonza Butler, you know, heads up SEIU, the Home Care Workers Union, which is the largest SEIU union in California. Tefari Gabriela, who heads up the Orange County Central Labor Council, he will become the next new executive board member of the executive council member of the AFL-CIO, and he'll be the first immigrant ever to be appointed to the executive council. So I think in Los Angeles, we're bucking the trend, and we're really shifting in a direction that shifts away from the comment that Kent made about the labor movement being male, pale, and stale. But I think, you know, that's a reflection of the fact that comment is made from the perspective that we're in a process of transformation, and transformation is going to require leadership, strong leadership, and it's going to require an inclusiveness, a type of patience of working together with the AFL-CIO. This convention actually, it's built upon 1999, the last time the AFL-CIO had its convention in Los Angeles. And back then, Marielena Durazo and others led the way to shift the direction of the AFL-CIO on immigration. And I think that was the seeds. They laid the foundation for where we are today. And since then, you know, we've developed these innovative partnerships between the AFL-CIO and worker centers, especially the National Day Labor Organizing Network and other worker centers. The Clean Car Wash campaign, is an example of all these different partnerships with, you know, the labor center partner with the AFL-CIO and United Steelworkers to create the first ever organizing that really has a strong community alliance component to it. And now the Clean Car Wash campaign, we have the first union contracts ever in Los Angeles in the car wash industry. But now in New York, They're organizing car wash workers in Chicago and Santa Fe, New Mexico. So I think these are examples of how LA is kind of showing the direction of where the movement needs to go to.
Are there any particular labor issues that are especially important here in Los Angeles?
Well, wage and hour violation is one of the major ones. LA, based on a study that we did 2 years ago, in Los Angeles, low-wage workers lose $26.2 million every week on wage theft. And in Los Angeles, we have...
Wage theft, that means they're just not getting paid what they're entitled to?
They're either getting paid, or in the college industry case, they're not getting paid wages, but they're getting paid in tips. So it's either payment, non-payment, or just paid less than what they agreed to. And we're the worst city in the country about that issue, but then we're organizing workers at the same time. And I think the college industry, since they started the organizing campaign in 2008, they've really... advance in the process of getting rid of the major violations been taking place mm-hmm. in the industry. So it really shows that union organizing and these kind of partnerships between workers and centers and unions are really a way to address some of these issues that impact low-wage workers.
Victor Naro, again, project director at the UCLA Labor Center. Let me go back to Harold Meyerson. So Los Angeles is in many ways then, particularly because of its diversity, a particularly good place for Trumka to have announced and emphasized this new campaign.
Oh, absolutely. And I think a lot of people in the labor movement look to Los Angeles as a model for unconventional forms of growth, for how to raise workers' wages at a time when workers' wages aren't getting raised in a lot of places, and for its being ahead of the whole national movement on the issue of diversity. Although, you know, I will add that at this point, the two largest unions affiliated with the AFL-CIO nationally, one's headed by an African-American man and the other's headed by a Jewish lesbian. So I think at this convention, I've been to lots of AFL-CIO conventions, this is the first one where, you know, your stereotypical old white guy puffing a cigar, there are a lot fewer of them.
But isn't there also opposition? I don't know whether it comes from them in particular, but isn't there opposition to this idea of open membership to people such as you described earlier who aren't, in fact, even members of unions or likely to become members of unions?
Well, there's less opposition to the workers that we've been talking about than there is to some of the stuff that was discussed earlier about, like, should the Sierra Club and some of these other groups be on labor's own decision-making bodies. I don't think we're going to see that. But we will see labor trying to build sort of omnibus organizations, including them, including groups like that, and try to be a more effective presence for progressive America generally. Then there is still a little opposition to whether groups like this should have votes and groups like Worker Center should have votes on labor bodies. But by and large, I think the idea is popular here. It's increasingly popular.
Victor Naro, back to you at the UCLA Labor Center. Do you want to see any downside to this?
No, I just think the labor movement is such a state of crisis that transformation is going to have to be necessary. This is the most inclusive AFL-CIO convention, and I think, you know, growth, innovation is the main theme in this convention, and it's up to us now as a partner with the labor movement to hold ourselves accountable to all these great resolutions that they've been adopting the past couple of days.
Just before we run out of time, Tom Perez, the new Secretary of Labor, spoke to the convention today. Harold, what did he have to say? Where's the Obama administration stand on all of this?
Well, most of this stuff is internal labor questions, and they're not going to take a stand on that. But in general, he made a strong case that we're aligned with you on immigration reform, on minimum wage. It was a very popular speech in the hall, and Tom Perez himself has a sort of progressive pedigree that outshines most of the rest of the administration, with which the labor movement still has some differences on a range of issues, but less with Tom Perez.
Harold Meyerson, now with the American Prospect in the Washington Post at the Convention Center downtown in Los Angeles. Victor Naro, Project Director at the UCLA Labor Center. Thanks for telling us about the AFL-CIO Convention. Good to have you both on our program.
Thank you all.
Good to be here.
Remember, you can join the conversation on our Which Way LA Facebook page.